is At The Races with Steve Beck.
From Gulfstream Park, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, stevebeck.com, top of hour one here, day two, from Hallandale Beach. we learned a valuable lesson coming down from Boca, staying at my cousin's, offered up the apartment. The thing is so big, I could maybe go the week and not see her. I kid you not. But I'll tell you what, I've been making my mate plans each morning to leave at about 7:15. It's 20 miles, which, you know, can translate down here into, you know, 20 hours of travel time. Today, it's crazy how random coming down here at the traffic scenario. It's like if there's a major problem on any of the arteries, there's a problem everywhere. You would think between the turnpike and 95 and then all the lattice that cuts across, you would think that if some place is snarled, and there was, I guess, north of the airport of Fort Lauderdale, everywhere I tried to bob and weave and dodge, and I mean, as it happens, I still got here with 20 minutes, but I'm leaving every bit of an hour and 45 as a buffer. It's crazy. So, I mean, yesterday I sailed down. In fact, yesterday I had so much time, I was able to stop at our favorite in Dania, Bake Shack. I brought Tina to Bake Shack. If I didn't mention it yesterday, got Tina down here just overnight. She couldn't really stay. She had to, you know, go right back on Sunday afternoon on a direct flight, but I had a bunch of... I had used a free ticket because I booked a million different legs of travel for this month situation. And so I said, you know what, going to be a beautiful weekend. So she came down, got a little bit of sun. I got too much sun. As I said, if you were listening just now to the replay, to John Barada, I was going to go out for another round of peeling. Yeah, and I'm a peely mess. But hopefully by the weekend, I'll be moisturized. It was fun to walk in yesterday and have had Mike Salito and Jason Blewett were, literally just between the time I walked from the car it's here to the Horseman's Lounge. We do the show from the Horseman's Lounge, you know, which is in the pathway from the paddock, the tunnel, you know, to the track apron. That when you see the camera angle, they come out of the little tunnel, little place for the horsemen to congregate, you know, either between races or while they're waiting for their horses to run. And done it here mostly the last 10 years easily. For a long time we did it in the breezeway, which has got some problems. The fact that it's called breezeway gives you an idea. The wind comes whistling through there. That's in case you remember, we had thinking about Chet hanging out with Chet there, and Casey came one day and with Jackson, right? Jackson, you had Jackson come with you you produced from here, which was fun. That goes back. All right. Well, there's our opening, I guess, and got plenty to cover. Norm Cassie is going to be here. Not physically. Norm Cassie will be on your radio waves. You'll hear from Norman. I had to go back to him. I mean, after even, you know, we had him at the sale, but he won himself a Fairgrounds Oaks. Pretty darn good. So we'll talk to Norman and get his thoughts. One thing, if you're just listening again to the replay, by the way, and Case has got to confirm this for me, but the stream, sorry about the stream yesterday, but the streaming company crapped out for the after, you know, for about the last, I guess, what, hour and 45 minutes, maybe something like that. I guess right when Migs started around 10:10, they had some sort of a thing fail, and they couldn't get it repaired until after the show. So anyway, Case taped the show this morning, the replay from Sirius, and we'll chop it up and we'll get that. We'll use that for the archive and to send out, you know, on iTunes and stuff. All right. So if you missed, if you were looking for yesterday, and yesterday was a lot of fun between Todd Bletcher and Joel Marr, Larry Rivelli. You're going to want to hear all three. I did not actually. Did they publish the? Maybe today they'll publish, because I did not see the press release, if there was one. Let me just look in one place to see if they had specifics about the late nomination. Something tells me it'll come today. Yeah, looks like, look for that today. It seems like your Sunland Derby winner, and it's still not going to take away from the story, Wild on Ice. I mean, it didn't appear like the race was going to come back, you know, fast. Certainly not in the vein of Money's Gold, for instance. But at 77 buyer for Wild on Ice. And so, I don't know, it just seems, it seems a little ambitious to think about him going on to Derby, but we'll see. It sounded like from Joel that they were going to pay the $6,000 and, you know, have the opportunity if they want. So, as it happens, the Oaks filly that Todd Fincher won with, Flying Connection, that was a faster race. I mean, it might be. Let me turn to. I've got. It'd be nice to clear out some of the stack of PPs. I mean, the 77's a career top for Wild on Ice, and, you know, obviously hard to figure the way in which he stopped certainly looks like a breathing problem or, you know, something along those lines, because he had run obviously a fast race in the Lewis to just be beaten, and Henry Q had run a 90 plus in the Mind That Bird Derby. So it's not like, you know, it's not like there weren't some okay performances on those PPs. Had low expectations. The Redham that we laughed about, 88 buyer at Santa Anita going a mile, wire to wire. So, not entirely sure how to make a final determination anyway on what we saw in that Sunland Derby. It's not like there haven't been nice horses that have come out of the Sunland Derby long term. The Oaks race, let's slip here. Let me get this. Let me go through this while we're in this direction. We got to talk some Heisa. I don't know yet if Alan Foreman's going to join us this morning or tomorrow. And there's a good chance he joins us this morning, because I got a hat full. I kept promising you last week in advance of the Haiwu portion of HISA, the administration part of monitoring and testing and so forth, and penalties and everything else that goes with it, started yesterday. So there's quite a few pieces of news that have accrued over the last several days. So that got to be waded through. This is including something that kind of came out maybe sooner than it was supposed to, per se, the Trotting Association, USTA, floating an alternative piece of legislation, more along the lines of a compact. So I want Alan Foreman to address all of that. It also includes the news from Friday, with one of those classic Friday afternoon news dumps. The panel members were announced as well for the anti-doping and medication control panel. Some familiar names and some new names. And familiar, yet some fresh, from kind of the Chinese menu of of panel members. So we're gonna agglomerate all that information together and look for an Alan Foreman comprehensive visit on all those topics. Back to the Andy Serling later, by the way, as well. Joe Clancy, instead of Thursday, Joe will join us today. Some very familiar names broke their jump maidens over the weekend. That card at Aiken. So I'm going to catch up with Joe Clancy and more. And Billy Badgett walked through here about 15 minutes ago, and I every time I see Billy, I say, when can I get you on the air? Oh, okay. And then he never comes back. It's like Apollo and Joe Frazier in Rocky in the original, right? You avoid me, Joe. You avoid me. Flying Connection, a Nyquist, a whole slew of friends and family. It's like a telephone plan. King, Andrews, Coleman, Cone, on and on. Kirby, Lewis, all partners in Flying Connection, wire to wire in that Sunland Oaks. This for Fincher, and Angel Juarez aboard. He's now a four-time winner. Had won the Island Fashion. This is the one that came up yesterday with Joel, because his filly, or not his per se, but we mentioned Judge Lanier Racing, who had a nice day. And one of the Lanier wins, Dean's List in the Thomas Memorial. This is Ray Ashford Jr. and Leandro Goncalves aboard. This horse has won three straight. And actually, the horse that that Todd Pletcher had last year and was last seen behind Dash Attack in the Long Branch, and then was laid up and clearly changed hands, and seems okay. That in fact, just checking, 87 buyer for Dean's List in that win. And then you had in the Henson, City on the Nile, owner Amanda Sweeten, a Temple City 6-year-old mare. And she pretty much wired some early vying before taking over, and has won four of her last five for Andres Gonzalez. Boy, this horse—it's funny. She she really, she's running in the 70s. She's running 70 buyers, and this is interesting. Casey Lambert had this horse last year and was claimed for $6,250 and isn't necessarily running much faster, but has got wins at Albuquerque and Zia, and then, you know, wins here. Sunland is, she's always been pretty good at Sunland. So she won her 13th career race, and it's a stake. Mary Henson, what a cool story. $6,200 claim, and she, you know, she's really has not improved dramatically. I mean, pretty much running the same kinds of 70s, you know, 70 type figs. Pretty cool. And now, you know, now you can do something. 71 buyer winning the Harry Hansen. The other early, by the way, the early New Mexico breds, let's get those in here too. And I can officially turn the page on this. We mentioned Judge Lanier. Nancy Summers sent out Crafty Money in that New Mexico Breeders' Oaks under Goncalves. Lillian Silva for owner Charles Dunleavy. There's a homebred. A Marking Gelding, I Think I'm Here, won the New Mexico State University. Now, which is the Lobos? New Mexico's the Lobos, right? New Mexico State. Aren't there, there's minors involved in this too, right? Or is that UTEP? All right, somebody lay that out. the New Mexico State University handicap. I Think I'm Here. With Juarez, 10-1 actually, at a nice price for I Think I'm Here. And Valentino Who won the New Mexico Breeders' Derby, a comfort gelding for Jose Gonzalez and owner Juan Gutierrez. And, you know, you heard Joe Mark mention Sam Stevens. This is a Sam Stevens bred, paid a huge price, 45-1, 91.80 to win. So that was the New Mexico, the Sunland action. And I do want to get Frank Sumter on and talk about his cool story. Yesterday at Santa Anita, a couple of quick notes before we look at the rest of the Saturday and Sunday action. John White actually gave you most of that. But, you know, yesterday in that feature that John actually mentioned, Richard Mandela and Spendthrift were hoping to get a tightener in Coffee in Bed, who really did not come through. Got beat on the square at a tick under even money. So instead, at 5-1, Sadler and Aronis Costa and John Sadler, a Bolt Oro filly, Anywho, who kind of seems like she stepped forward here and went off actually as the as the third choice? Yeah, as the fourth choice. 11.80. So nice mutual. In fact, I happened to have seen earlier, right? Sadler and Costa won the opener. I think, right? Was it the opener? I know they won early on the card as well. So a two-win day for the team. But the notable part of this is this, you now wonder, Anywho, the Bolt Doro, she, I imagine, has to look ahead in a couple of weeks to the Santa Anita Oaks, right? How does she not off of this effort? And maybe it's, you know, she's two for two. She won in New York when Albert Tranny had her. And private, purchase. So, We'll see. I don't see why they wouldn't try, right? That was our friend Rob Masiello that had this horse, and this was a good performance, and it looks like a savvy purchase by the Aronis operation, such as it is. And they as we said, the couple of West Coast owners that just love every level of the game, Costa and Gary Barber, they just enjoy being involved. We'll save the New York stuff for Andy, and here let's get some of the other Turfway that we didn't get a chance to talk about yesterday. We had kind of raced through quite a bit. The Animal Kingdom, Wesley Ward with the Coolmore and Partner group, the City of Light Colt. Eyewitness got bet down to 4-5, coming off the maiden win on New Year's Day, and essentially duplicated that. In fact, took a little bit. Did she take a step forward? About the same. The New York bred that might be okay. Wins the Animal Kingdom. See what, I haven't seen any comment from Wesley about what he wants to do next. The Rushaway ended up being a crazy upset in here, and it's funny. This was a race where it seemed like there was an opportunity. I think we discussed it enough on Friday to talk about prices, and I thought I found a fun price in Ocean Point, and Ocean Point ran great at 35-1. Yeah, could not catch Rarefied Flair. Chris Landeros, who had, as you may have seen the tweet Sunday morning, career day, 3 stake wins for Chris Landeros. And Rarefied Flair for McPeak and Magdalena, plus partners CNH, Diamond Racing, David Bernard, and there's a Riccio involved. Rarefied Flair, an Honor Code colt out of an Archmare, Maccabee Farm, bred, and 30-1. 30-1 over 35-1. Unbelievable. And I played Ocean Point and got nothing. Got absolutely... it's funny. You develop as a horse player, and I guess this is as good a place as any to bring this up. You think you're getting, savvier. Years ago, going back to probably the 90s, I started playing in the late 80s, and through the 90s, if I had come across a horse like Ocean Point that you knew was going to be, at least 20-1, I would, a lot of times, do one or two different things over the years. Bet to win and back wheel with all, or in some cases, bet all. I mean, if it was just a quick, fun, just an action bet, 12-horse field, just, one by 11, 11 by one, just to get $22, let's say, for a buck, just to have action with a long shot. And in this case, the exacta paid $1,337 for two, so $670 for a buck. And but as I got more sophisticated, quote unquote, as a bettor, you started to drill down. And there was no way I didn't see a way even afterward to get to Rarefied Flair. you know, felt like a horse. I mean, Ocean Point had just run a race 10 days earlier in a starter that, you know, that made him, I thought, competitive. You know, very competitive. Rarefied Flair is interesting, and maybe this is something Jeff Franklin and I should probably, I'll just take a couple of screen captures to discuss this. Because Rarefied Flair had been running, we've been talking Third Graph and patterns. Rarefied Flair had been running basically the same figure for his last five starts, going all the way back to literally to his second career start as a two-year-old at Saratoga. He broke his maiden Travers Week, or it might have been Alabama Day even, I think. The horse had been basically stuck in, obviously, first gear. Had been running ran a 14 on the turf, first time turf, then a 13 and a quarter, 13, 13, 13. And had been off 5 months. So, okay, I tell you all the time, I like, you know, horses improving when they've been off, you know, from 2 to 3, 3 to 4, even 4 to 5. But there were six other horses, easily six other horses, that you would have used in this scenario ahead of Rarefied Flair. So, bet Ocean Point, you know, bet to win, and bet with four horses. And get nothing. You're thinking to yourself, oh, am I a more sophisticated player now? Or should I revert to, you know, the wide angle lens, to the shotgun approach betting to win and then back wheeling with all. This certainly was a spot for it. Anyway, I could also mention, I think I mentioned it in passing yesterday, I was kicking myself. I outsmarted myself and all of us that were trying to hit that Bayou Bluegrass. I told Mike and Jason yesterday morning. I art collector and West Willpower. I used them as bees trying to get prices, either Power of Medina. I forgot to bring up with Todd yesterday, and Mr. Wireless. I mean, if you just use the two logicals, the backup ticket hits for $7,100. I mean, very frustrating. That was tough. I told you. Then on Sunday, I played the late pick five carryover because I was annoyed at myself for missing, you know, that opportunity, the Bayou Bluegrass. That was a very clever wrinkle to tie Turfway and Fairgrounds with that pick five. I wonder, you know, this summer, I suppose, get Gary Palmisano. Get Palmisano on the phone. G-Pal. how about linking Ellis and Colonial this summer? Right? There's got to be, see if there's two of their days that two of their big days that might overlap. Ellis doesn't really have, you know, they've got individual stakes, but they don't have like a big, they got the groupie doll card. But I think there's only maybe, there's the Ellis Juvenile, groupie doll, right? They don't have like a big, big day, but, you know, good Saturday racing whenever those two cards could potentially collide for a, what would we call it? The pea patch. Let's see, pea patch. And does Colonial have a nickname? You got to come up with something. All right, we'll work on that. All right, before I call Norm Cassie, idiomatic. We knew idiomatic was going to be tough in the Latonia, and she was. Idiomatic, one of those three Landeros stake winners. And I think, you know, $7.06 was not a bad price. This is a new stake winner for, not just for Judmont, but for Curlin. Curlin gets another one. Wolfie's Dyna Ghost, and boy, oh boy. reality setting in on Wolfie's Dyna Ghost. He's absolutely a throwback to the synthetic era, a synthetic specialist. Now 3-4-3 on synthetic, the Ghost Sapper Gelding for Woods Lane. Congratulations to them. Jonathan Thomas, of course, now with him. Has him now. And the other Brad Cox winner on the stake front, the Bourbonette Oaks, Botanical, and same thing. She figured, and there was also Merlaza, right? Merlaza, she was down at Fairgrounds, but Merlaza won the allowance there. So a bunch of Philly Brad Cox successes this weekend. Botanical, you know how it's funny? Sometimes you know, horse wires, and you know, sometimes they're life or death. Botanical looked like a winner every single jump. It was one of those things where you just they went evenly 24-2, 48-2, 113-2, 138-1. Landeros. That's got to be a Cadillac kind of a feel, right? She was a winner every step of the way. The disappointment in here was that first North America runner that was kind of a mystery horse in here. Bolidi, yeah. The Brendan Walsh as one racing import coming in from Cagnes-sur-Mer. That's a racetrack in France that I don't think I've ever noticed before. I think I did write in my write-up that she had been racing in the provinces, as they say. She had run at she started her career at Deville, but then Toulouse, Marseille, Pau, P-A-U, a couple of and this Cagnes-sur-Mer. Sur-Mer is by the sea. But she might, we'll see. She's going to have to establish herself on these shores. No Lafayette, we are here. Bolivie, we'll see about her. Of course, Cox was 1-2 in this race with Flashy Gem. And on paper, that's the way the race looked. Let's be honest, right? And Renegade Rebel. Remember, we talked. That was a wise guy horse about maybe getting to the front. Yeah, there was no getting to the front. She chased from inside and was really never a factor. So there was your nice card at Turfway, and of course in the Ruby, two fills and Major Dude. And Fantastic again ran well, ran fine, but was beaten by a pretty wide margin. Cherie DeVoe had a maiden winner, too, at the end of the card. Apriati. Nice price, too, $17.56. So there's Turfway. All right, let's put this on hold because I still got more. I won't be happy until that we got the Florida Oaks, not the Florida Oaks, the Florida Cup races. Sam Houston should really get Nick in here to recap. Hopefully, we got to do a Dubai recap. We might get, certainly Dick Powell tomorrow. So let me pause this. All right, we will turn to that man who is, I think, now making his third visit of the young, still young year, right? Well, it's not so young. It's 25% at the end of the week, right, on Friday? First quarter of the year, already in the can? Well, Norman is... Cassie going to join us, and Norm, give me 1 second. I just we're hearing simultaneously from Alan Foreman, and well, and now I've lost Norm as well. So not too clever. this is. It's always a challenge. All right, there we go. There's Norm Cassie. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was explaining, you know, the year is 25% old on Friday, and you're going to be the leader in the clubhouse with I think a third or fourth appearance on the year.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having us on again.
Well, and I. You know, how can I resist? You joined us last week at OBS, and almost everything that we talked about went out and ran.
It's nice when plans come together, that's for sure. I mean, there's been plenty of times where we've come out and said things and they didn't happen, but the week kind of went exactly the way we expected it, so that was nice.
Well, let's talk about the Philly. Because you win yourself a Fairgrounds Oaks, that's, you know, one of those nice kinds of races that builds resume. And, you know, this is a filly. You and I were talking actually Sunday morning when the figures came out. And, I mean, I suppose that Todd's, you know, filly long-term, Money's Gold, maybe she's, you know, the fastest, you know, kind of hobby horse in the group, you know, the speedster type. Maybe she's this year's Gamine. But why isn't South Lawn as good as any this staffer among the sophomores?
Yeah, Steve, I don't know. I've been trying to figure out who's out there that we should really be afraid of. I mean, I guess my dad's filly is the horse to beat right now until... they prove otherwise. I think you got to throw her Tampa race out. I think she probably just needed the race, and we'll see how she runs in the Ashland. But I really feel like that division's wide open, and I have an improving horse that is going to relish going 9 furlongs, and I already know, just by default from being there, that she loves Churchill Downs. So we're just, you know, cautiously holding our breath and just hoping we have the opportunity to get a chance to win it. To run in the Kentucky Oaks, so we'll see what happens.
When what's your itinerary, and are you all packed up, and how many, everybody moved?
Everybody just, all the horses just arrived from the fairgrounds to Churchill this morning, so we're setting up the barn as we speak, so that includes South Lawn, she's there, and then I'll leave, you know, as well as we've been doing at Oaklawn, it's kind of hard for me to leave Oaklawn. So I'm going to leave my Oaklawn division open until the end and see how many more races we can win there. It's just, they've been so good to us over there, and I'm really enjoying supporting Oaklawn Park at this point.
Well, as we talked on I guess it was Tuesday at OBS, why not? I mean, picking all kinds of, you know, the right spots. And as you explained, too, in some cases, it's just things are breaking your way in terms of the races that end up getting carded. In terms of breaking things South Lawn's way, you know, she had that improved effort in her two-year-old debut, you know, which kind of set a new, you know, performance level for her, but then this was going to be, you know, the next logical test, and it's not as if they were setting her up for some, you know, big deep close, Norm. I mean, she actually, they were going a pretty steady clip, and she just inhaled them and ran away.
And I feel like if you watch the races the entirety of the day, it seemed like that type of race was not winning races that day. So, no, I think she's a very good filly, Steve. I'm very excited. I feel like it was hard for me to get overly excited after the allowance win. She came back with a nice buyer speed figure. She had always breezed and trained like she was a really good horse, but we've all had horses win races by big open lengths, and it turns out that they didn't beat anybody. And when they come back and they run in the stake race or the next level up, they're kind of exposed. So I was basically just holding my breath to see how she ran on Saturday before I really started getting myself excited. And I think it's time to start getting excited about South Lawn and what's happening.
Well, and we talked last week about Bat Masterson and a lot of the portions, you know, going back to the Teppan, the Teppan days. So this is a new big horse for him. And frankly, 1740 was a very inviting return for those that jumped aboard. I still have not seen what I understand is Gabalicious going crazy. Where is it? Where can I find it?
Everybody has it. Just find it on TVG. I'm sure somebody's retweeted it. She does this like bunny hop when she's excited. So I recommend finding it.
That's great.
No, that's very cool. It was just a really, really cool weekend. It took a lot of guts to kind of change things up and historically have always Churchill and Kingland's home, right? So that's easy. But to make the decision to change things up and move our winter home to Oaklawn and the fairgrounds and to be rewarded the way that we have is probably the coolest thing about all this. Is it's like, you know, we just played our cards right. And, I'm just proud of what we've been doing.
I love it. Well, I wanted to come back. The Pioneer of the Nile, Philly, she gets a perfect ride as well. We should fold in Raylu Gutierrez as part of this. And, Raylu, with the first riding title of his career at Fairgrounds, so a great weekend, a great way to close things out for him as well. You could tell he's tickled. A bright, interesting kid.
He's actually a really, really nice guy. I really think what makes him stand out, though, a little bit is obviously he's very talented, but he's ultra confident, and I think for some people it rubs some people the wrong way, almost as arrogance. But when you're coming in the paddock, and here to me this was the biggest race of my career so far, I think that goes without saying. I mean, I've been in bigger spots when I worked with Dad, but this was my first big spot, and he came in and he just knew he was winning the race. He came in the paddock and he knew he was winning the race, and it was just like, you know what, that's what you need. That's what you need in a rider. And I think he's going to start winning, bigger and bigger races as go on. And I do think he deserves a ton of credit, though, with this filly in particular. We can say that, we did the throat surgery to her. We did this, we did that. But maybe Raylu has figured her out as well. I do think that he lets her break and then lets her get into her own rhythm. He doesn't force the issue too much. And then when she decides it's time to go, he lets her do her thing. And I just feel like they get along really well together.
Well, it was a fabulous day all around for you and for Bat Masterson, because earlier on the card, New Beat breaks the maiden. And you were hopeful that, that she was going to break through.
Yeah, I was kind of, I was really disappointed with the way that she ran her first start. I know she had a big excuse. She clipped heels inside the 3/8 pole. But really, up to that point, she was outrun. And the reason she clipped heels is because she wasn't fast enough to keep up. And I was just shocked by that, because I really felt that New Beat was one of our better horses, and fortunately, we have a group of nice horses right now, so that's saying something. But I think I think we made the right decision. It was clear that as talented and as fast as she seemed she was, it was more of a routing speed. So come back, put her in a route, even though I don't like that setup, Steve. You come and you've basically sprinted her, but she didn't even run because she was eased out of the race. And now you've got to run a route race, essentially your first start. And I'll tell you another thing is what's funny is such a great day. We obviously won two races for Robert, and it was a good day, but it was set up because Fairgrounds canceled races last week and New Beat was in last week, and I actually never even had a rider for her. So as soon as they canceled the races and saw that they were putting the races back up for Saturday, I called Kieran McLaughlin and made sure that Luis Saez came in and rode that horse for us. And I thought he just did a great job on his beat. So that was a good decision.
Another example of the way things have gone, basically, right?
Exactly. And those are the little things, the little details that have happened that, you know, are the difference between winning and losing.
Well, it's been a whole lot of winning for the barn, and it's not necessarily over, with the winter turning to spring. There's, everything we've talked about in these last couple of visits seems like poised for, success to breed success.
We're going to try. I mean, we're probably not going to win a lot more, here in April. We're going to try to slow down just a little bit and just run the horses that we need to run at Kingland. But really now take a step back and try to focus on having a really, really productive Derby week at Churchill. I mean, I think that's a chance to showcase our stable. Everybody's watching. And I get to kind of keep Churchill Downs happy, which is my home, which is very important. So now it's more of a take a step back, regroup, and focus really a lot on that week. And so really the spring, that's our goal now.
Well, I don't know if you saw, probably did, one of the references I made to the weekend performances. I tried to come up with a little highlight for everybody when putting out some figs and so forth. The fact that all your graded stake wins, and this was your first grade two, they've all come with fillies and mares.
It's I think that just is by that's all people send me right now. You know how Robert is. Robert goes out and he likes to buy fillies. It kind of helps with the risk of spending a ton of money on a horse. If they don't pan out, they still have broodmare value, so he does that. Who's my other big owner? Mary Lou Whitney.
Yep.
It's just by chance that it's all fillies, right? So, I don't know. It just seems like maybe we do get along better with fillies, but at the same time, that's all I really have had so far. So I don't care. It really doesn't matter. I'm just happy we're winning these races.
Well, one more opportunity. In fact, before we wrap, Pretty Birdie in that Matron on Friday at Oaklawn.
Turned out to be a really, really tough race. We got two grade one winners coming back in there. I feel like we're a little bit at an advantage. We really like the track there. Wicked Halo beat us last time we ran against each other, but that was 7/8. We kind of had her number at Oaklawn going 3/4 when we ran with her before. Metarea is clearly good, but I think she's probably more of a 7/8 to a mile type horse as well. Pretty Birdie should run a much better race than she did previously. I don't think she really likes to off going that much. And plus, we really, really kind of babied her into the last race, really kind of focusing on winning this race coming on Friday. So, I don't know. It ended up being a tougher race than we expected, but we still have there's some expectations there that we should run a really big race.
Well, I was printing up the PPs this morning for Saturday, and I just wanted to see what the rest of that card was. And then it occurred to me, So let me, I know they're back racing Thursdays. They've been racing Thursdays again all month, and so I pulled up the Thursday card, and that was okay. And I said, let me look at Friday, and I didn't even realize there was a stake. And then I started looking at this, and I'm like, holy cow! but
it's a serious.
It's crazy.
And it's crazy because it's not even graded. It'll be graded next year.
It is what it is.
You know what it is, Steve? Is there's just not a whole lot of races for those type of horses this time of year. You could have waited and ran in the Madison opening weekend at Kingland, but that's 7/8, so that doesn't work for us. And that's a tough spot for Brad and Steve to bring their fillies back. So I understand. I understand why it's tough, and it is what it is. And, this will be interesting because I've already talked to John Hendrickson about it. If we don't win on Friday, which I've stated why I think we should win, if we don't, I think I'm toying with the idea of possibly running Pretty Birdie 5.5 on the grass, just because she's so naturally fast. And you just kind of got to let her do her thing. Now, I'm not suggesting her pedigree. It's just a hunch play. It's just like, well, we are what we are, going three-quarter sprinting. I don't know if we'll ever make it to the highest level doing that. But maybe if we put her 5.5 on the grass and she excels at that, well, that kind of opens up a lot of different doors for her. So, thinking a little bit ahead, and there's a perfect race on Kentucky Oaks Day going 5.5 on the grass for her. If we decide to do that. So that would kind of be the long-term plan with her.
Not so bad. That's a nice, always a nice idea. And just picking up, I just looked back. I wanted to see you're up to 16 wins. Last year you set the highest, just 5 years on your own, but last year 36 wins for the year. So I was curious. The year before 31. So you're on pace to absolutely obliterate. And you're not. Norm, you're not. It's not like you're starting way more horses either.
No, but you know what I think, and I've told this to several different people. Like if you look at my earnings and my chart and everything up, it's going up the right way. We're winning more races each year, we're earning more money each year. I'm still not getting the type of business that I thought I would be having by now. And this is not me trying to throw a pity party for myself or anything like that. We're very fortunate. We have a lot of good clients. It's just, I'm still only a 25 horse barn. Like I don't have that many horses, not as many as we would like, but I think the last key to that is having our first big horse. Like we haven't had a legitimate big horse yet. And I'm hoping that South Lawn is what we've been looking for this whole time. Because if we can do really well with her and manage her the right way, that should really open a lot of people's eyes. And I guess that's what we're really looking forward to for the rest of the year.
Well, and we could, we could mention, given, and I brought this up with you, if I didn't bring it up with you at OBS, I brought it up with you previously, but, getting horses from the lead longs, for instance, let's fold in a post-sale conversation. How did you make out last week? What were your impressions? And I should also include the catalog went online yesterday. The April catalog for OBS is available now for perusal online.
Yeah, we left with three horses that we know of. Deuce Greathouse, who we can't go the entire show without mentioning him. He helps pick out horses for Robert, so a lot of Robert's success has to be. We have to mention that Deuce does a great job going out and buying horses for Robert. He's picked out Teppan, picked out South Lawn. A lot of people don't remember this, but She Dares the Devil, Kentucky Oaks winner, was bought and purchased by Deuce Greathouse. I had her when she broke her maiden. Unfortunately, I didn't get to finish the job with her and win the Kentucky Oaks with her. But I'm hoping, for more of the same with Southon, and I think we got to mention that Deuce does just a great job. So he went out and picked out two, you know, just modest horses for me. I have a syndication that I've been training for called Let It Ride Stables. We bought a two-year-old filly, a Bolt D'Oro two-year-old filly for them. It's a Mary Lou Whitney pedigree horse. You'd have to go look. I think it was hip number 68. But it was a half. She's a half-sister to Beep Beep, who, if I could have kept Sound, was probably my best colt that I've had so far, circling back to that conversation. He just didn't stay Sound. So I get to train her, which is his half-sister. So I'm happy with that. Alex, I know you were alluding to Alex. Alex bought a $550,000 Vito Rosso. But I haven't heard yet whether or not I'm getting to train that horse at this time. So I'm excited. I think I probably should, but that's for his decision to make.
I love it. I'm just looking at those two. I'm looking at the two purchases, and yeah, this was a. It's interesting. A $50,000 Munnings and the $75,000 Catalina Cruiser. That area of sale, you know, which going back was, you know, kind of a bread and butter at OBS and even at OBS March. But as Richard Kent actually said something really interesting to me the day after the sale, and he said, you know, it's tougher these days to buy that kind of a horse than it is a $300,000 horse.
For sure, and I think it just depends. I feel like there's just different levels of the game. I know that seems like a common sense way of putting it, but, you know, the people who go out and buy $50,000, $75,000 horses are just playing an entirely different game than the guys that are going out and buying a $500,000 horse. And I'm not just saying expectations about how much money you're going to earn at the racetrack, but by what goes on after they're finished running at the racetrack. We've had a tremendous amount of success at that $50,000 level where we've turned around and made allowance horses out of those horses. And yeah, they're not getting your name in the racing form and things like that, but they're turning a profit. And I think sometimes we forget about that. You know, at the end of the day, it would be nice if you're owning a racehorse that he's actually making money for you. And when you only spend $50,000 on one, it's a much, much easier to do.
Well, and that's fun that you're going to put a group together. The Catalina Cruiser, New York bred, out of Kibosh, and then there'll be a whole nother round. You'll go back for April?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I'll try to show up for a day or two and just walk around. And again, trying to generate business.
Yep.
I'd love to have more clients. It feels like. You know, we're winning races, we're doing all the right things, but still having to go around and making sure that I see people and that, you know, out of sight, out of mind. If you're not there, people aren't going to necessarily think, hey, maybe we should send Norman a horse. Well, that's kind of the whole reason I go down there.
No, exactly. I mean, you got to be, you got to be present, and you got to market. There's no doubt. Look at me. I mean, I'm showing up at all, showing up everywhere. I one track after another at HBPA, Vegas.
You're having fun, though.
Yeah, of course I'm having fun.
We're all having fun. Let's not take that for granted.
Exactly right. Well, it was fun. Given that we I think helped for a certain number of players. I think we kind of helped project the possibility for Southwan with that conversation the other day, and I think quite a few people took advantage, and the reward was $1,740, and the reward even bigger for the Norm Cassie barn, and I got to go find the bunny hop from
yeah,
from Gabs.
Find it. You know what? I'll text it to you as soon as we're off the phone.
Perfect.
I just texted it to Robert of all people, so I have it queued up. I can paste it. I'll send it to you right now.
Awesome. I love it. Norm, well done. Congratulations.
Have a good one. Thank you for having me on.
Not at all. Norm Cassie, everybody, who, you know, a couple of references to Tepin, and we did say, I think, openly, because I know, you know, he's trying to walk that fine line between, you know, being outgoing and marketing yourself. I mean, this is an interesting topic, to be honest. And I've gotten a lot of correspondence actually on this. Most recently about somebody, in fact, like Jimmy Jerkins, and there's a couple of different brands, quote unquote, of trainers that deserve more clients and more horses. You know, there's the up and comers that, you know, that are trying to make names for themselves, and you know, it seems like, you know, some catch a wave and some don't. And the margin between, you know, talent levels, quote unquote, of and abilities of shed rows and you know, training is not a lot. I mean, there's very little separating. You know, what separates, you know, individual trainers is the quality of horse that comes their way. And so that goes hand in hand with the recruiting portion of this. So there's the up and comers that are trying to get established and you know, attract the type of owner that is going to get them, you know, to not the promised land. You don't all have to have grade one winners to be successful in this game. But then there's the veterans that a lot of times over the years, they didn't get complacent. You know, I hear some people say, "Oh, well, they're complacent." No, they're not complacent. They're just not self-promoting. They're not inclined to direct the spotlight on themselves. And when those kinds of outfits, when they lose clients, when clients die off or leave the business, they're not easily replaced. So this is tough, and you know, and then and none of these people, whether it's veterans that are not out there beating the bushes, it's fine now, Case. The level's fine. It was loud. Yeah, it was loud when it started. Neither side of this equation, this scenario, you know, the veteran outfits and the up and coming outfits. Neither one, as you even heard Norm say, you know, don't want to come off as complaining, quote unquote, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want to say, you know, why does outfit A, B, C, D, and E have 300 horses each? It's a legitimate, I mean, it's not even a gripe. It's an odd. I guess we can invoke the 80-20 rule. You know, 20% of any entity is going to have 80% of what comprises the entity. That's a business maxim that, I mean, really is true. I mean, the good horses are the concentration of talent. We say it over and over again. So everybody, you know, everybody deserves a chance with a good horse, and even that's not a perfect answer or to, you know, to this issue, because you know, when you've got one in the barn, it's tenuous in some respects. Very tough topic. Let's take a break. Hour two, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? NairaBet.